birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my abracadamets have had a good week. I hope y'all have been getting stuff done, son, having an abracadam good time. I hope everybody had a happy and safe 4th of July. It was safe. It got a little loud around here. People were dropping them backyard bombs. And I think the older I get, the less I can do firecrackers. That's what I think it is. You know, man, I will say this, but I'm not one of these people complain. I mean, yeah, I can put up with it for a day. You know, that's cool, you know. My dogs don't really like it. Yeah, everybody knows, you know, dogs don't like firecrackers. So let me just say this. If you are buying your dogs firecrackers, you are a jerk. Don't buy your dogs firecrackers. They don't like them. Also, something new I'm doing is, I started a TikTok channel. Yeah. And I was always a little reluctant about, I mean, I've been on TikTok for a while, but I didn't really do much because I mean, you get on there and you see a lot of the same stuff, people ripping other people off, no really original ideas. You know, every now and then you see some stuff, a lot of white people dancing on TikTok. A lot of white people love to dance on TikTok. But I do want to give a quick shout out to a TikTok channel that I discovered that is very original and very helpful. So check out my boy Matt Reedy's TikTok channel, The Driving, The Driving Center. The Driving Center. There you go, Matt Reedy. The Driving Center. He gives driving tips, safety tips. So you watch, and it's stuff that I never even knew. I was like, dang, this is good stuff. And we all know we need to be better drivers. Come on, y'all. Let's be honest. So, I mean, it's a great channel. So check him out, Matt Reedy, The Driving Center on TikTok. That's a good TikTok channel with some helpful stuff that we could all use. And also, if you're on TikTok, be sure to check my channel out, Danny Whitson Magic _ comedy. I'm trying to put some new stuff out there, trying to make you smile, trying to make you ooh and ah. So be sure to check mine out as well. But all right. Let's just get right into this while I'm on a roll. Let's give a big shout out to the sponsors for today's episode. Okay. You ever get up in the middle of the night and you think you might see like a shadowy figure there in the corner of your bedroom? And then you get to looking a little closer and you're like, does he have my underwear? But then you realize it's just that big pile of dirty laundry that's been piling up in your bedroom. That's right, folks. Today's episode is brought to you by Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Yes. Now, if you're anything like me, I hate doing laundry. And yes, dirty laundry can pile up. So don't hesitate to take your laundry to Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services, located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. Bob also offers a delivery service for anyone who's a senior citizen or homebound. Guys, doing your laundry has never been easier. All you have to do is take your big old pile of dirty clothes, drop it off, come back, and your clothes will be clean, dry, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Check them out today. This episode is also brought to you by The Grove Barbershop. Now, guys, I've been getting my hair cut at The Grove for a long time. And owner and operator, Jeff Hackler, is an awesome barber. And the best part is, all you have to do is just make an appointment. You go online to thegrovebarbershop.com, select your time, select the day, and then show up. You show up, everything is clean, organized, and it's just you and Jeff. He gets your hair cut, gets you looking nice, and gets you out of there in no time. So be sure to check out The Grove Barbershop, located at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Jeff a call if you want to at 865-482-2210 and make your appointment at thegrovebarbershop.com. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is someone who actually I've wanted to get on the podcast for a little bit. Very similar to an entertainer's type lifestyle because they are very busy. They work weird hours. And they're also into pleasing the public. That's right. And so it's somebody who I've wanted to get on here for a while and talk to them because I find this very interesting. I find what they do very interesting. And it's something that we all love. A lot of us love to talk about it, too. So I tell you what, if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation about food and other things with Chef Aaron Wiley. All right, we got Chef Aaron Wiley here today on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Chef?
I'm doing great.
Well, I tell you what, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This is my first chef I've ever had on the podcast, so I'm excited about that. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to my listeners?
So my name is Chef Aaron Wiley. I've been a professional chef for 20 years. I'll be 40 this year, so a long time. And I love it. I'm currently in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Now, are you at a particular restaurant? Or are you doing something on your own?
No. So I actually run three restaurants. We have three restaurants in a very old building downtown right on Front Street. So it's challenging for sure.
Gosh, three restaurants. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a job. And Wilmington's kind of a really cool, interesting place too, right?
Yeah, there's a university here. There's a lot of great food. Obviously, we're on the coast, and they film a lot of movies and shows here as well.
That is,
but it's kind of like, I mean, it's getting really big, but it's, you know, definitely got a beachy vibe. Like, people go to interviews in flip flops, you know.
Hey, that's my kind of interview.
Right.
So, okay. So, well, okay. Now, everybody loves food. You know, let's be honest, most people love, everybody I know love food. So, but what got you into wanting to be a chef? Where did it all start?
Well, I guess when I was 11, my mom had a baby, and my family is originally from California. And so we were always exposed to like different cultures of food. And my mom's a really great cook and baker. And so after she had my little brother, I just kind of started cooking at the house because she was working a little bit. And also that show Great Chefs, which used to be on in like the 90s. You can't really find it anymore, but I always loved that. And so I just started really cooking at home for my family when I was a kid. There were definitely a lot of trial and error. That was for sure.
See, it seems like that's where it starts for like a lot of people, I guess, is at home and cooking. And you know, it seems like that's where a lot of the great chefs, that's kind of what they say, you know. So you started, you know, but was it something you always knew this is what you wanted to do? Or did you leave it and come back to it or something like that?
So I left it and came back. I went to college for a while. I was majoring in literature and cultural anthropology. And then I don't really know what made me start looking into it. I was probably about 19. Well, I started looking into culinary schools when I was about 13 or 15. And then I guess I just kind of forgot about it. And then I actually dropped out of college my last semester and took off to San Francisco to go to culinary school.
That is super cool. So you went to culinary school in San Francisco?
I did, yeah.
Oh my God, that's super cool. Super cool. Now, and you said you were originally from California. Was that the air part where you were from?
Not really. So my mom is born and raised in LA. I was born in Long Beach, and my dad is born and raised in Sacramento. So all of my mom's family is still in LA, and all of my dad's family is mostly in the Bay Area. So I did have a little bit of a support system there. I moved there when I was 20, I think. Yeah.
Well, first of all, my wife Antoinette grew up in Long Beach area.
Oh, really?
Back there. So yeah. That's I've never been, but eventually we're going to go. We're going to go back out there. And I would love to go to San Francisco too, just to go see it, you know. I bet that was awesome learning how to cook out there.
Yeah, I had actually, you know, as a kid, we would go vacation in LA, but when I moved to San Francisco, that was my first time in Northern California. So slight culture shock, I guess, coming from Oak Ridge. But, you know, I always like to say that I have a California mentality, but Southern tendencies. So it really wasn't too much of an adjustment for me because I grew up with a lot more exposure to cultures and craziness than most people would probably get because my parents were from out there.
And you know, what's also super cool is, well, first of all, for you guys listening, Aaron, I think you went to the same high school I went to, right? Didn't
yeah.
Oak Ridge High School. So Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And also for you guys that aren't familiar with Oak Ridge, Tennessee, it is the one good thing about Oak Ridge is it's an educated town.
Oh yeah.
So it's a little more, you know, no offense if you're not in Oak Ridge or anywhere around, but I'm just saying it's a little different, just a little different. But that's cool though. So San Francisco Culinary School, is there, how do they start you out though? I mean, do they just, I mean.
Well, I had, I kind of skipped a step because I actually worked at Sonic all through high school. And so I worked there for a long time. And that was before they took debit cards. So, you know, I made a lot of, we made really good money. I made better money than my friends that were servers. So I ended up cooking there a lot. And I think that that's probably what got me into it. And then I ended up getting a job on a dude ranch in Burnsville, North Carolina, which is outside of Asheville. And I was there for a year, and half of the year during the winter when they were closed, I took care of like 100 head of horses. And then when we opened back up, I actually was the sous chef in the kitchen. So those two were really kind of my first exposures to the industry. I mean, that was family style. It wasn't anything crazy, but I guess that's probably why when I moved back and got back in college that I decided it was something I wanted to do.
It's so crazy the way, like, you know, especially life, when you think about it, the journey, you know, the path that you take to get to a place. And then, you know, we always think about the destination, but the journey is so, so important, you know? So how long normally is culinary school? How long do you usually go? What is it?
It just depends. So I went to the Cordon Bleu, which is obviously based in Paris. There's a couple all over the country. And that was a year program. There's some other ones that have 2-year programs, but you're looking at a minimum of a year.
Okay, cool. So did you hang around out there in San Francisco any before you came back?
So part of getting your diploma from there, you have to go on an externship. And so I had a teacher that was Chilean. He taught Foods of the Americas class, which is basically like all the Latin cuisine. So he picked my best friend and I and another guy in our class to go to our externship at the Hotel Portillo, which is in the Andes Mountains in the middle of nowhere, northeast of Santiago. And so we were actually there for 8 months. You know, I think it's the second highest ski resort in the world. It's the number 3 ski resort in the world. When we were there, it was right prior to the Winter Olympics. So the teams from all over the world were training there. It was a lot of fun. And I don't ski. So I think, you know, I did it one time and that was enough for me.
Now, okay. So have you ever been, so you've never been there before. This is like your first time ever like being there, right?
Yeah, in South America. I've been to Europe, but yeah, it was my first time in South America, and I would go back any day of the week.
Oh, man. So, and you got to cook for all kinds of people, I bet.
Yeah. I mean, the kitchen was massive. I think there were like basically 3 restaurants in the main resort. You know, because we were Americans, we had full access to everything that the resort had to offer. Well, obviously the locals didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there were like 50 people that worked in the kitchen at once. I mean, it was, you know, I really didn't learn much. And, you know, the Chileans are just amazing people. They're hilarious. They're so kind and they're quite funny. They're big pranksters. So, I mean, really, they just kind of teased us, messed with us.
What kind of people? I need to go to Chile. It sounds like okay. Well, what is their cuisine like? What is their food like?
Well, I think because we were at that resort, and I didn't really get like too much exposure. I mean, obviously we'd go down to Santiago, or I spent a lot of time in Mendoza, Argentina, on our weekends off. But honestly, it's just really simple food. You know, it's kind of like a European, where everything shuts down like during siesta time, and they have, you know, that's when they have their largest meal of the day. They go home and have a cup of tea. But really just kind of peasant food. They love hot dogs and French fries and chicken, a lot of seafood, but nothing that crazy, but obviously very good.
You know, first of all, okay, I'll never forget when I first learned, like, is it Italy, or I can't think right off the top of my head which country, European country it is, but basically, like, around lunchtime, everything's closed because they're at home eating with their family with this big giant meal. And yeah, I think that's interesting. Like, America would lose their damn minds if we did
that.
Wouldn't
that be nice, though?
It would be awesome, though. It would be awesome. Well, you know, one thing, okay, you know, my wife's Filipino, and my palate has changed so drastically within the 20-something years we've been together, been married.
I love Filipino food. I do it a lot at the restaurant.
Well, see, you know, I love it. Lumpia is my favorite type of egg roll, you know.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, things have changed, and, you know, there's things that I eat. Now, we'll be honest with you, this is weird. I find this weird is that, like, you know, I always like make fun of, like, you know, white people got to eat fried rice all the time. But you know what I like? I like plain jasmine steamed rice.
Yeah.
And before I always had to have my crap fried. Now, but now, you know, I think it's just being around Filipinos for 20 years. I got to have that steamed rice, baby. That's the stuff, you know.
I think, you know, with all my studies and exposure and research, you know, pretty much daily, I've noticed that the older I've gotten, the more simplified my palate has become. Like, these days, like, just give me a cheese pizza. Like, I don't need all that other stuff on it, you know.
Maybe that's it, too. It could be, you know, as you get older, you know, because there are some things that I'm just like, you know, I don't want all that craziness, you know.
I'm maybe more of a purist, you know.
You know, one thing, I'm a real purist on this, okay? Now, I'm not one of these cheesecake kind of nuts. You know, I'm not crazy about cheesecake, but I eat it because it's cheesecake. But I don't like cheesecake when they put like a bunch of like Oreos and just all this craziness on top of it. I'm like, it don't really, to me, I'm like, you know, there's just too much going on there.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Cheesecake Factory?
I have been to the Cheesecake Factory. I have.
That's
been.
Insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like a 20-page menu.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I used to actually tell an old joke about that in my show years ago. But a little overwhelming. Now, let me ask you that then, because that's an interesting topic, because I've heard, like, okay, you get a lot of people who open up a lot of mom and pop type restaurants, and you've got the school of thought when they look at the menu that keep it simple, you know, not a whole too many things on the menu, and specialize in what you specialize in. But then you've got places like Cheesecake Factory that'll have everything, you know, and the kitchen sink on there. So what's your opinion on that, on like on a menu?
Well, you know, I obviously it works for them, but they're trying to appeal to the masses. You know, me personally, I think it's better to have, I mean, my background is coming from restaurants where if the menu didn't change every day, it changed every week. You know, it was a smaller menu. Everything was, you know, working with a lot of local farmers, like fresh. You know, there's certain like things that I go to restaurants, if I see that I won't like. And it's funny because with myself being a chef, when other people cook for me, they're always very nervous. And honestly, honestly, I'm just happy to not be cooking. And that like, investigative, like, you know, thinking cat part of my brain when somebody else is cooking for me is turned off. But now if I'm paying for it, like I'm certainly critiquing it, but I don't even think like that when somebody's cooking for me. So it's always funny because everybody gets so nervous, but it's not, you know, I'm just happy to not be doing it for once.
You know, I mean, that's probably, now do you cook a lot at home, or is it because from where, because I'll be completely honest with you. If I'm out with my friends or I'm doing something, they know better. They never say, hey, Danny, can you do this for so-and-so? Or can you do something for, you know, show them a magic trick or, you know, no, I do not want to do that. You know? So
my husband is actually a chef and we have a 3-year-old at home and he stays home with her full time. So he does most of the cooking. I cook at home? Yes, but not, I mean, maybe like once a week. But, you know, I think people think that chefs have, like, they eat the best food. And, like, I mean, it's simply not the case. I mean, I work 60 hours a week. And, you know, most of the times, you know, I'm just, like, grabbing a hot dog or a slice of pizza, you know, and being around food all day, like, it makes you kind of really, you know, it's fun to make and taste it, but it just kind of makes me not hungry a lot, you know?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of people will think that they'll say, hey, Danny, have you seen so-and-so's new comedy special? Or have you seen, did you watch Penn and Teller Fool Us? No,
yeah,
I don't, you know, and I hardly ever, you know, watch something like that on television. I don't watch it. So yeah. I kind of get where you're going there. But now also let me ask this, because I was thinking, I was like, you know, there's something about cooking for total strangers, which is familiar to kind of like what I do. You know, I perform for total strangers and it's almost like I'm seeking their acceptance and their judgment of what I'm giving them.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same thing that you do by preparing food and cooking for food. Was that ever something like a hurdle or something that you had to get comfortable with? Because it is a judgment. It's a judgment right off the bat.
No, I never felt that way, but I think, I'll never forget. I have a buddy that's kind of like a big time chef in Portland now. And when he started at the restaurant that I worked at in San Francisco, this little like awesome neighborhood place called Firefly, when he started, I was like, so what's wrong with you? Because I think you have to have a type of personality to do this and do it well professionally. And it's obviously a lot different with me being a biracial woman and being in the South. So it's a lot different, but you know, he always teases me that I asked what was wrong with him, because I think you have to be a sort of masochist. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, there's some part of you that's like looking for acceptance. And it's also, you know, I'm like a big procrastinator in real life. And it's so funny because I've chosen a career that I cannot procrastinate in. Like, it's just not going to work, you know? So it definitely keeps me on my toes. But yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. There's something there that just, you know, you're looking for some sort of acceptance.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're putting, you know, this is your stuff and you're saying, and eating, man, I mean, that is like, you know, that's number one, probably of the two super cool things that we get to do as human beings.
Yeah.
I don't even got to say number two. We know what number two is, but number one, only one of those most people do in groups. I said most, but that's eating. But I mean, eating is, it's one of those things. And now you are a professional. That is what you do. What is your favorite dish to cook?
Man, I mean,
and I know that's like a cliche question that every chef probably gets asked.
It is. You know, I'm so fortunate that I've been exposed to so many types of cuisine, being in San Francisco for as long as I was. So I have a good grasp on literally like 20 different cultures, cuisines. And I can bake and do desserts as well. A lot of chefs you meet will never do pastry. No, I can't make insane wedding cakes, but I can do some nice desserts. Honestly, I think my biggest passion though is Mexican food, like real Mexican food.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you being from California.
That's what I love. I mean, I could eat tacos any day. I make them 40 different ways. But I would say, and it's funny because I'm not working at a restaurant right now where I can do that type of food, but I'd say that's my favorite.
Yeah, I think Mexican people have totally is like, you know, what's the best of everything? That's our food. So
it's just so the processes, and I think that they don't, you know, there's some famous chefs now that have like gotten a lot of credit for Mexican food, but I don't think, you know, I think people, when they think Mexican food, they think, you know, like chips and queso and like a number four platter. Like, it's so much more nuanced. It's a lot, it's, you know, very difficult to make. It's all fresh. I have so much respect for the culture and the food, and I love spicy things. So I just think it's delicious.
I do too. And you know, some, and I know people are starting to catch on now, because I think actually some of the commercial places are starting to serve this, but years ago, you know, me and Antoinette, we would even make our own, but tres leche cake.
Oh my God.
But
let me say though, I also like the crap Mexican food too. So I'm not hating on that.
Oh yeah. No hating on the crap Mexican food. I love that too. But yeah. There is Mexican food though, that is another level type Mexican food. You know, one thing that drives Antoinette crazy around here, it's so hard to find, unlike whenever she was in California, is good tamales.
Oh yeah.
And I think she did find a person who was making them for a while, but it has been a while. But, you know, Antoinette used to, I think, you know, she used to get them when she was a little girl out there, and she just craves good tamales. Like tamales too. I do like them too. They're good, but that's her big thing, is the tamales.
Okay.
So now you said though, but three restaurants, what's the name of the restaurants?
So, we have the Husk on the first floor, which is bar food. It's kind of like a really popular weekend hangout, you know, like a lot of, college students. It's a big bar. We actually just did an awesome gay pride event and had a drag show. I know, it was super cool. And on the second floor is a restaurant called Yosaki, which is Asian fusion and sushi bar. And they've actually been 15 years, and it's like insanely busy, super popular, like very hip. And then on the third floor is Dram and Morsel, which is small plates, like world cuisine. And that's kind of my baby. But due to COVID, we haven't opened back up yet, because we were actually using the third floor for Yosaki seating, because Yosaki is so busy. But we should be opening soon, and I can't wait for that.
So do you do sushi too? Do you know?
Yeah.
Nice. Hell yeah. Damn.
I'm a little rusty now, because I don't do it a lot. But I used to be, at one time, I was really good at it.
It's just a lot.
The hardest part is, you know, the sushi menus. We have a big sushi menu. So I'm really slow now, because I don't remember. I have a manager that runs a sushi bar, I'm a little embarrassed to say. So I'm not exactly sure what's in all the rolls these days. So that slows me down, but I do go out there and do some sushi with them occasionally when we're busy.
That is super cool. And you said you did a gay pride at which one?
Yeah. Well, it was like in the Husk courtyard. We have like a big courtyard outside, and there was like a drag show. And this is the second year we've done it. And, you know, obviously me coming from San Francisco, I love it. And I'm really, really proud of us for, you know, for putting that on.
Super cool. You know what, man? I think, you know, we're talking about different cultural food. I think gay people need their own food. We need to figure out, gay people, if you're listening, I want to hear the food. We need some gay food. That would be great.
I think they just probably eat really well, right?
I don't know. Like, my son's gay, and he went back and forth on trying to be a vegetarian forever. And wow. I'm not vegetarian. I am not vegetarian. I don't knock anybody, whatever you want to eat, dude, however you eat, whatever. Yeah. But I say, hey man, we got these pointy teeth for a reason, bro. Give me that meat.
Yeah.
Look, what's your take on that? Honestly, how do you feel about like vegetarian, or there's even just people out there who only eat meat, you know? So what do you think about these crazy diets?
Well, you know, the food pyramid in the United States is so inaccurate, because basically the beef industry and the dairy industry have paid off the government. So honestly, it's true.
It is true.
The most accurate food pyramid is the Mediterranean, you know, which is like a lot of olive oils, nuts, you know, lean proteins, vegetables. So, you know, you're really supposed to eat red meat once a month. I mean, I don't think anybody in this country could say that they really eat red meat once a month.
Oh my God, no.
You know, I mean, to each his own. I try not to, I try to love everybody, not be Not that it can't get annoying at times, but if you have a food allergy out there and you go to a restaurant, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be very happy to work with you. But make sure that you know your allergies. Like, ask if you have questions, certainly ask your server, because we never want to kill anyone or injure or make anyone sick. So, you know, you just tend to get a lot of customers that say they're allergic to things that they're certainly not, like salt. Like, come on, you're not, nobody's allergic to salt.
But, you know, I used to say I'm allergic to broccoli. I used to be like, I'm allergic to broccoli. Don't put it in there.
Yeah.
Or I'll die. You know, but I'm not allergic to broccoli.
If you have a food allergy, it's your responsibility to make sure that that you're communicating that to the kitchen. But, you know, I mean, whatever. I'm happy.
Well, you know, I think I think, you know, a balance of everything, you know, is kind of what you need. And, you know, everything in moderation. I really believe in that. I think we all eat too much damn red meat. That is absolutely the truth.
And the cow parks are destroying the atmosphere.
There's all kinds of issues. And I love you stupid cows. I don't know what to do. I love beef, but at the same time, we need a planet. So it's all crazy. But who knows? Who knows what'll happen? Let me ask you this then. Since we're on the topic, this is kind of interesting. You are a chef. What is your opinion about this lab-grown beef?
I mean, have you had some of it?
I haven't tried it.
I think a lot of my vegetarian friends, they say it weirds them out because it actually bleeds like meat when you cook it. So there's proteins that come out of it while it's cooking. It definitely tastes pretty close to the real thing, but I mean, I'm all for it. It's better for the planet. And I mean, why not?
You know, I'm not saying I wouldn't try it.
I don't think it's full of as many chemicals as probably cows are pumped full of. So why not?
Well, you know, this is how I would treat it. I would treat it like sausage, like hot dogs. I don't want to know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't want to know any of that. You know what I mean? Put it on there. If it tastes good, hey, I will eat it. You know, that's kind of the way
I think it's important to pursue, you know, new things. And like I said, just the beef industry is causing a lot of problems worldwide. And if we can find a safer alternative, then I'm all for it. You know, I've been known to order a veggie burger with bacon on it myself.
But see, now I don't. Okay, this is my thing. You know, I'm not big. This is why I think we're supposed to be meat eaters. Okay, this is my reason why. You just said it. You said veggie burger. Like, you don't ever see a meat eater ordering meat-shaped broccoli, do you? No. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, I mean, it looks like broccoli, but it's really meat. You know, no. You know, so I think we crave, you know, meat. No matter how, you know, crappy and mean and sad and weird it can be.
It is pretty sad, and I'm probably going to get trouble for this, but I feel like there is a reason that we're at the top of the food chain. But you know, things should be sustainable and kind and people, a lot of people that don't eat meat will eat chicken, and chicken is disgusting. Like, I'm broken down, even whole animals, sides of animals. And I'll tell you what, chicken is definitely the gnarliest.
I've heard that. And I know pigs are just straight up, you know, pieces of shit, dude. Pigs are just so gross. And
they're smart, though. They're really smart.
They are smart. But that's the other creepy thing. Because it's like, it's okay for us to eat some dumbass, but if you're smart, we don't want to eat you, you know?
I'm embarrassed to say this as a chef, but my family hunts, and I had a previous chef that hunted, and my brother had killed a huge elk out in New Mexico, and then a previous chef had raised and slaughtered a pig, and they were showing me all these pictures and then brought me meat, and honestly, I couldn't eat it because I couldn't help but think of the poor animal. And so that's embarrassing to say as a chef, because I do want to know where my food comes from, but maybe I just personalized it too much, and I was like, I can't eat that. I saw the pictures, man.
Yeah, that's me. I don't like personalizing stuff either. That's why the things I don't like to know. Like there was this video, I don't know if you saw this video, but there was this video of this cow playing ball with these children. Literally, the cow was kicking the ball and nudging it with its nose, and they would kick it, and it was the sweetest thing. And I was like, no, dude, I don't want to ever see that. No, yeah. You know, I do not want to know about that, you know? So I totally get you. But at the same time, though, you want to make sure that, I mean, things are being done right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cruelty to these animals. And yeah. we do have a cattle problem with the, you know, the gas going up and affecting our, you know, that's an issue.
That's a huge issue.
Yeah. So we've got some problems, some things to look at. Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever gotten crazy food requests? Something really crazy?
Well, I've had people that actually, if they have a lot of like a very restricted diet or food allergies, like actually come in with like printed cards that list like everything that they can't eat. And I know that the servers get annoyed, but as a chef, I get a giggle out of it. I actually appreciate that because,
oh yeah, you
know, gone the extra mile, I guess. But I think the weirdest, I've had people like send back like a crudo because it wasn't cooked, which it's not supposed to be cooked. I've had one time.
You said a crudo?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's raw fish. It's Italian. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I've one time at a restaurant, I had somebody that actually brought in like their own, basically like an MRE, and asked us to heat it up. That was pretty weird. But most people aren't too crazy. I mean, it's annoying, but it's also like pretty comical.
I remember one time. Now I've never seen anybody with an MRE, but I remember one time this was like at an Applebee's. And this lady came in and sat down and she was looking at the menu. And while she was waiting, she literally whipped out a bag of barbecue Lays and just started chowing down. I was like, no, I'm not talking about a little bag. I mean, one of the big bags. She unrolled a bad boy and we just started going to town. And I was like, damn, people are weird.
Yeah, they'll definitely try you in the restaurant business. You know, we try to be as accommodating as much as possible. But sometimes, I mean, if it's a ridiculous request and we're slammed, I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, you know, I think chefs take a lot of time in planning out, you know, combinations and menus. And, you know, it's just kind of annoying with somebody's like, oh, like that chicken, all the set for the chicken sounds amazing, but I really want a steak. Like, can I get the steak with the chicken set? And, you know, we work really hard to combine things and make sure that things work. But again, I mean, I'll still respect people, but it can be annoyingly comical sometimes, I guess. I'm trying to watch what I say here today. I don't want to get in trouble with anybody.
You'll be okay. There's no trouble here on the Africa Dan podcast, Aaron. Okay, well, so let's, you know, when I think about, you know, cooking and stuff, first of all, I'm a big fan of like Alton Brown, Good Eats. I used to love watching some Good Eats. Anthony Bourdain, gosh, he was, man, I know, but it was so great to go see where he would go try these different foods and different cultures. And
I had a beer with him.
You said you had a beer with him?
Uh-huh. In San Francisco, yep.
Let's hear it. That's awesome.
Gosh, I can't. It's been so long. Chris Cosentino is the famous chef. He really made the whole like tit to tail famous in the country using the whole animal. He had a restaurant in San Francisco that's now closed. I can't for the life of me remember the name. It will come to me. But Anthony Bourdain had gone there and filmed. I'm sure you can find this episode. It was, God, probably 15 years ago. And a good buddy of mine worked there, and my restaurant was actually up the street. And after filming, Bourdain just sat at the bar and bought everybody a round of beers. And I didn't really talk to him too much because obviously everybody wanted to talk to him, but he was so kind and gracious and, you know, interesting because I was a writer for a long time. I said I majored in literature. So that was something that I'll certainly never forget. And still to this day, I can't even watch his shows right now because it makes me so sad.
Oh man, I bet that was though awesome too.
Yeah, it was cool.
Man, and he was a down to earth, really nice guy.
Awesome.
That is so cool. That is super cool. Now, have you? What about you? What do you think about these TV chefs? Do you have anyone in particular that's right now, or is it kind of like, you know, for me, a lot of famous people on TV, you know, are, you know, sometimes there's misconceptions when you kind of know things that other people don't. Any of those chefs out there like that for you?
I mean, you know, I grew up watching the Food Network, like when it first started, which was, you know, a little different than it is now. I think a lot of them are celebrity for no reason. A lot of them aren't real chefs. A lot of them I very much appreciate, but like you said earlier, you're not going around watching comedy specials all the time. You know, I watched all that stuff for so long. I grew up watching it. It's kind of difficult for me these days and what little precious time I have off for me to want to sit and watch a culinary show. I like a lot of the documentaries. I have, I watch like Rick Bayless on PBS and Patty Hinnich, who's the Mexican chef. That those are like the only two that I'll watch every now and then. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, more power to them. You know, I've eaten at Guy Fieri's restaurants when I lived in Northern California. I think he just signed like a $300 million Food Network contract. I know.
It's almost
look, I'm not going to hate on anybody. If you're making that kind of money and you can do it, then like more power to you. Gordon Ramsay, I'm actually a big fan of. If you watch his shows in Britain, he acts completely different. I mean, he's kind of a dick. Like he'll tell you how it is, but you know, for the American audiences, he's like way playing it up. He's like actually a great guy. And, but yeah, I don't really even talk chef these days. I mean, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't have a lot of time for myself. I just don't really want to watch all that.
We used to watch Hell's Kitchen like all the time. We would watch it and it would just, I would watch it but now every episode is the exact same damn season. It seems like, you know, Gordon, he's saying the same crap to everybody.
I will say that I watched the last season and my husband, I said, is a chef. And he was like, why are you watching? Like, it's so not real. I mean, I was like, well, I just want to watch it so I feel better about myself and my staff because I mean, those, you know, no disrespect to them, but those people are not functional and that's not the way a real restaurant runs. Like, none of those people would ever last a day in a real restaurant. So I think, you know, that's what's kind of annoying and upsetting to me is I meet people all the time that find out I'm a chef and they're like, oh, I'm a foodie and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, this is the only really industry that's under a microscope. And people, obviously everybody has good and bad days. You can have a bad meal sometime and a great meal. But, you know, there's been famous chefs that have literally commit suicide over bad reviews. And this is the only industry like that. And it's very stressful and it's very high pressure and it's dangerous and difficult. And I think that people need to take a step back. And especially if it's a small local business, like, you know, what you're saying is damaging a lot of people. If you had a bad experience, then just don't go back. It's not helpful to bash a restaurant when there's a lot of people's livelihoods at stake. Now, I'm not saying that like some restaurants need to stay open. You know, there's a reason that 2 out of 3 restaurants close in the first 6 months because it's a difficult business to get in and you have to know how to do it and have done it for a long time. And just because you like food doesn't mean you should own a restaurant. I mean, I always say like, I like to drive a car, but I would never open an auto body shop because I don't know shit about it, you know? And I think it's a money pit. So I think it's just better to like take a step back. If you have a bad experience, then just don't go back because most of the time people really care, and they're trying. And you know, like I said, it's a crazy, crazy career to be in.
You know, okay. All right. I've got a couple things I got to throw out here.
Okay.
We have went to restaurants that were absolutely horrible And we didn't go on Facebook and bash it. We didn't, you know, I've even said, well, you know, they've only been open for this long and I've seen some really bad things. And, you know, you also see, especially in this area, you'll see, oh man, people maybe inherit some money and then they get the idea of, well, everybody at home thinks I make really good grilled cheeses. I should open up a restaurant, you know, and they know nothing about running a business, nothing about the service industry, nothing. Just because, you know, people in your house may like your cooking don't mean that anyone else is going to like your cooking. So, I mean, we ran into a place like that, you know, a couple years ago, and we just didn't go back, though. We didn't bash it. We just didn't go back. It stayed open maybe 3 more months.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to figure out. It's just not helpful. And, I mean, I wish I had time to, like, sit around and be an internet warrior and bash people. Like, you know, if it's not good and it shouldn't work, like, people are going to figure it out. And, you know, it's unfortunate for the business owners, certainly. But, you know, you don't make money off of food in restaurants. You make money off of alcohol. You know, you're lucky if you're making 13% profit on a dish. You know, you can mark up alcohol 200%. And so that's where the profit margin comes in. And, you know, water is very expensive. You have to think of, you know, you need linens and glassware and plates. It's an extremely expensive business to get going. And if you don't know what you're doing, like, you're in trouble.
You know, that is so true.
A lot of lives.
That is so true, because just like, you know, in comedy clubs don't make money off of the entertainment. Of course, not the chili cheese fries. No, right. They make their money off the alcohol. Alcohol is where the money is, and it seems like in every business like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is kind of back on the Hell's Kitchen question. Something I got to know, because I love to eat these bad boys. Are scallops really that damn hard to cook? Because it seems like on Hell's Kitchen.
Okay, here's the funny thing. I'm not like huge into eating seafood personally, but it's my favorite thing to cook. And there's just something so gratifying about cooking the perfect scallop, which you don't really see people do a lot. And so scallops are actually my favorite thing to cook.
I love them, man. I've had scallops that were overcooked. I have. And then I've had them undercooked. You know, I mean, like, you need to
cook. You want me to tell you how to cook scallops?
Hey, let's hear it.
All right. Dry them off. You're going to salt both sides. And when you're cooking seafood, when you use pepper, you only want to use it on the back, like the non-presentation side. Because if you get a nice sear on something, if you're sauteing it, grill's different. You don't want all that black pepper on there. So scallops, you know, salt and pepper, or salt both sides, pepper on the bottom. Salt side down in a hot pan with oil. Turn the pan down to kind of medium high. Obviously, I'm cooking with gas. And about every 10 seconds, give them a quarter turn. If they're stuck and they are not coming up, they're telling you they're not ready. But hopefully your oil is hot enough that they're not sticking. So that's what I like to do, is give them a quarter turn. And then once they have a really nice crust on the top, you flip them over and turn your pan off and let them sit. You're not cooking scallops. You don't want to get a hard sear on both sides. And that really goes for any seafood, unless it's incredibly thick. But you really want to cook it on one side hard, get a nice brown crust, and then flip it over and let it rest in the pan. And that residual heat is going to cook it perfectly and not dry it out.
Cool.
So there's a freebie.
There's a freebie. And you are a fan of steak, right? Do you eat steak or?
Steak a little bit, yeah.
What once a month, right? What, just once a month?
You know, I always kind of say I'm a vegetarian that eats meat. So I lied. I'm not a huge steak eater. I'm not. But I appreciate it and I love to cook it. But no, like anything braised, I'm all about. But I'm not a huge steak eater.
Well, you know, every time when I go out to eat and if I order my steak, I like to eat my steak medium, but I will sometimes order it medium rare.
Yeah.
The reason why is because it's going to come out medium at most of the places where I go to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that guarantees me a medium steak.
Yeah. So, Hopefully it's still medium.
Yeah, hopefully it's still medium. But you'd be surprised in some places to where, you know, people can't get that right, man. It's just...
I'm not surprised.
So, well, yeah, you're not, but I am. And, yeah. You know, I'm the type, as long as it's halfway there, I will eat it. But freaking Antoinette, man, if her steak ain't right, you know, she's, you know, you're taking it back. And I'm like, have you ever seen a movie Waiting? You know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know? So, but okay, well, let's do this. Chef Aaron Wiley, we ask every guest on the Abracadam podcast this question. We need to hear a hell gig story. Something crazy that may have happened in the kitchen, or something happened where you were preparing food for somebody important, maybe maybe one of those food critics. I don't know, whatever you got.
Well, I mean, I've definitely cooked for a lot of celebrities, but I think I can talk about the craziest injury that I've ever seen.
Oh my God. Yeah. Let's hear it. That sounds fun.
Now, obviously I've seen a lot of cuts and burns. I've cut the tip of my pinky off one time. I've had a lot of burns, but, I worked with this kid one time that was cutting a big block, like a huge brown block of cheese. And, he should have had a knife that would go all the way through the cheese so he could kind of get an even slice. And so he had like a really sharp, probably like an 8-inch knife, and was rocking the knife back and forth through the cheese. Like I said, the blade should have gone all the way through and it didn't. And so as he was rocking his knife back and forth in the cheese, his hand slipped. So the knife was still stuck in the cheese, and he kind of panicked and jerked his hand up into the knife. He got 60 stitches in his hand, like right in here. It looked like an industrial accident. It did not look like anything I've ever seen with a knife. I mean, not to be inappropriate, but he actually really never came back to work after that. We called him Vagina Hands because it looked like, I mean, it was that, not to be crude, but it was that deep of a split. And I've never seen anything like that. Like, poor guy.
Vagina Hands. Vagina Hands. That is awesome.
That's insane. I mean, the worst cut I've had in a restaurant, let me knock on wood, was 3 stitches. And that's only one time in my entire career. And I really started cooking at 15. So that's pretty good.
So Vagina Hands cut the cheese.
Yeah.
And wind up getting injured. All right. And he never came back. He's like, because they call me Vagina Hands, those probably. Assholes.
Probably.
That's hilarious. But hey, Vagina Hands, I hope it healed up. And I hope you're doing well now if you're listening.
Patton Upstate, New York.
So, okay, well, you just mentioned, you said you had cooked for some celebrities. So you mentioned Anthony Bourdain. Can you mention any of the celebrities that you have cooked for?
Juliette Lewis, Ryan Phillippe, Tracy Chapman, Tom Colicchio, and Padma, the Top Chef staff. Green Day. Jeff Bridges, Russell Crowe.
Okay, Aaron, hold on. My mind's about to blow. Hold on. You said there's so many cool ones. Tracy Chapman, my God, how? Mm-hmm. Okay. Everybody wants to know right off the bat, okay, what did she order?
God, that was so long ago.
Are you okay?
No, I don't remember.
What about Jeff Bridges? Do you remember what Jeff Bridges?
He was like a vegan, I think.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I remember he wanted French fries, but he, I think, was also gluten-free, and we had to, I had to set up a separate pot and cut him French fries.
That was
actually here in my current restaurant. I've worked here 3 times. So this is the 3rd time.
So was he in town filming a movie?
Yeah, it was, this was probably about 11 years ago.
Oh my God, that would have been the greatest thing. I love Jeff Bridges. Gosh, yeah. I love Jeff Bridges. What about Green Day?
So a restaurant that I worked at in San Francisco, they're like really good friends with the owners. So they would come in quite often. They were really cool. They actually would shut down and have a big Christmas party for us every year. It's called Foreign Cinema, which is a very famous, you know, nationwide restaurant. They tried to get Green Day to play our party one time, but they were on tour or something. I mean, Les Claypool was really cool.
That's cool.
I had drinks with Danny McBride and Jason Sudeikis. I went bar hopping with them one time years ago when they were filming Eastbound and Down here in Wilmington.
Oh, that was- my God. Yes, I love Danny McBride. You know, he's doing a lot of I really like what he's doing right now with the new Halloween movies.
Yeah, they filmed those here.
Oh, my God.
Yep. A buddy of mine, he actually is like a second director or something. So we've been trying to ask him about some of this stuff. Oh, no, I'm thinking Scream. That's what they just filmed the new Scream here.
The new Scream. Okay, now, Aaron, you're from my gym.
They did that too.
So I think they did I Know What You Did Last Summer there. I think that's
what they did.
A lot of stuff out there. You know, I don't know. Well, you know. I know I've got to get down to Wilmington and sure, you know, yeah. I got to try some of your grub. I got to try some of them. Yeah. I tell you what, for you, Aaron, Chef Aaron Wiley, I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to cook a dish right here on the Abracadam podcast just for you. Here we go.
Okay.
This is a special, special secret recipe. So hold on.
Okay.
Let's see. We're going to try this. I don't even know how this is going to work, but I got my bowl here. Let's see, we need some sugar right off the bat. Some sugar. All right. And let's see, we need an egg. Got an egg? Ugh. All right. Okay, we got that in there. We'll just put that whole thing in there. Hold on. We need here. We need this. Hold on. If I can get the lid off. A beer. There we go. A little bit of beer. There we go. Just a little bit of beer. You mentioned this. We mentioned this. Some Zyrtec. We don't want any food allergies. So let me get the Zyrtec. Here we go.
Quite the concoction.
Get some Zyrtec in there. And in here. Also, don't tell anybody, but we put some of this stuff in here. You know what that is.
And okay.
There we go.
Okay. I didn't see anything.
And last but not least, okay, we need something with a little kick. Little kick. Got a sock.
Okay.
All right, now. I prefer, you can use any sock laying around the house, any sock at all. I mean, if you want like maybe like one from a marathon runner or something like that, you know, it just gives it a little kick, just a little kick. Here we go. All right. Now we're going to cover it up. And now we need a magic word. Give us a magic word, Chef Wiley.
Shazam.
Shazam. Just like that. And now I think we've got it. Oh, it's ready. Yes, it is. My magic spaghetti.
I love it.
Yes. My magic spaghetti.
That looks delicious. Welcome.
It is very delicious. We'll get you high, and I promise you, you cannot taste the sock.
Even better.
There we go. My magic spaghetti. Just for you, Chef Aaron Wiley.
Thank you. Yay. Yay.
I tell you what. Now here's, I want to show you one more. That was a special trick just for you. Just for you, Chef. First though, you know, a lot of people, you use your hands, you do magic with your hands. I do magic with my hands and let you know, these are my real hands, except for this one. That's not my real hand, but these are my real hands. Okay. So what I'm going to do, we're going to do some mind reading.
Ooh,
you ready?
Oh yeah.
I always read minds on Abracadam podcast. I'm going to try to read some minds.
Sick.
Let's see. We will use Let's do this. We're going to try this. I'm going to remove some cards here. And I want you to think of one of these cards. Just think of one. Can you see it?
Uh-huh.
All right. Don't tell me. Just think of it. Keep it in your mind. I'm going to lose the cards in the deck. Give it a shuffle. And now what I'm going to do, Aaron, I'm going to cut to one of these cards. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm going to give it a shot. All right. I'm obligated, Chef Aaron Wiley. I am obligated. I've cut to one card. What was the card you were thinking of?
Eight of diamonds.
Aaron Wiley. Chef Aaron Wiley. The eight of diamonds.
That's awesome.
Yes. And I think it was subconsciously you being the chef that you picked eight because eight and eat. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with something. But yes, the eight of diamonds. I think you – did you freeze?
Hey, sorry.
She's back. It was so good. It blew her off the internet, ladies and gentlemen.
It did. Yes. And the awesome Wi-Fi in a 200-year-old building.
Hey, this was fun. This has been so great. I tell you what. What I want to do, let's see, before we get out of here, because we are wrapping it up anyways, so I just didn't want to lose you that quick. I was like, no, come back. At first, I just thought that you just weren't impressed because you were just staring at me like, froze on your face for a minute.
I was impressed. That was impressive.
We also here on the Abracadam podcast, we have to ask a thought-provoking question, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, Chef Aaron Wiley, you seem like a rational thinking human being. And I always say, if you're a rational thinking human being in 2021, it's tough times. You know what I'm saying? It's tough times. So, but let's do this. Now, I'm not a big conspiracy person. I'm not. But now here lately, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't want to go down this field, but because I can talk for hours upon this. This whole UFO video thing stuff going on is starting to catch my eye. I'm going to be honest with you. So I'm getting my tinfoil hat on that. But other stuff like Flat Earth and the QAnon and all that craziness, I don't believe that. But let me ask you, if there was a conspiracy about Chef Aaron Wiley, what would it be?
If there were a conspiracy about me, what would it be?
Yes.
Shit. I don't know. Maybe that I were an alien? I feel like my mom has that. Was it the type O blood that they don't know where it comes from?
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. So maybe you are an alien, and maybe that's how she can cook so damn good, y'all.
Maybe.
I keep telling you she's an alien. I saw what she does. She floats over the food. Yes. Hey,
to randomly show up in places. So, maybe.
And she just appears. She just appears with her food, and she can cook scallops right. She's not from around here, y'all.
Yep.
Okay. I'll tell you what, I can get on board with that. And then Chef Aaron Wiley's really an alien. There we go. And she's from Planet Damn Good Food.
Hell yeah.
So, hey, I will take that. Well, I tell you what, Aaron, before we get out of here, where can the listeners find you, find your restaurants, learn more about Chef Aaron Wiley?
Well, we are located at 33 South Front Street, which is in downtown Wilmington, North Carolina. Come by anytime. I would love to meet you, cook for you, have some sushi or some drinks. Hopefully the fine dining small plates will be back open soon. Come to Wilmington anyways. It's pretty. If you want to go to the beach and you're sick of Myrtle or Panama City, I know where a lot of Tennessee people like to go. You should check out Wilmington.
That sounds awesome. And I want to get to Wilmington. I've never been there, but I really want to get out that way. Well, I'll tell you what, this has been so fun. You are my first chef on here, and definitely it was a blast. Chef Aaron Wiley, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Anytime. Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Chef Erin Wiley. She is a fantastic chef, and if you guys are on Instagram, be sure to look her up there because she posts some delicious-looking pictures of some of her dishes that she serves. And also, if you guys are in the Wilmington, North Carolina area, be sure to check out one of her restaurants. I know I can't wait to get over there and eat some of her stuff. It looks delicious. Also, if you guys have not done so yet, be sure to like and subscribe to the Abracadam Podcast on whatever platform it is that you listen to. And also, be sure to check us out on YouTube. If you want to see the magic spaghetti that I prepared for Chef Erin Wiley on this podcast, then I suggest you go to the YouTube channel, the Abracadam YouTube channel, Danny Whitson Magic and Comedy, and watch it for yourself. You will be amazed. You'll be impressed with my cooking skills, I promise. And like always, Abracadamets, thank you for listening.
Danny, will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?